Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name's Stuart Campbell, and here with me to navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is the Queen of Cornwall herself, otherwise known as Boat International's travel and charter editor, Georgia Biscowan.
Hello.
Queenie, how are you?
I'm very well. Do you know what? I've been thinking about this Queenie thing.
Yeah.
Especially when you say the Queen of Cornwall, because I think eventually, if this takes off, I'm going to get like a stroppy letter from the royal family.
or
Kate Middleton, she's going to be livid.
Or a damehood.
Yeah, that's true. It could go the other way. They could be like, actually, good idea. I would love that so much.
So this week, we're going to be paying tribute to the passing of a few legends in the super yacht industry. And we will also catch up on the tariff merry-go-round. And Queenie, you're going to talk about some, in your own words, weird travel stuff.
Yeah, it has been pretty weird. For me anyway, but I think it's pretty cool as well.
Yeah, it is. And you've got some boat shows, some very exciting boat shows coming up.
So excited.
Your favourite time of year.
That's pretty sad, isn't it?
Not at all.
Not at
all.
Yeah.
But we'll start, obviously, with the incredibly sad news that Frans Heesen, founder of Heesen Yachts, passed away peacefully earlier this week in his hometown of Os in the Netherlands, which is also the home of Heesen. So Frans, as many people in the industry will know, was a visionary. So he started his career in industrial plastics, and he marked his entry into the world of luxury yachts when he purchased Striker boats in 1978. So this kind of laid the foundation for Heesen Yachts, which delivered its first yacht, the 20-meter Amigos, in the following year, 1979. In the 4 decades since, Heesen has delivered more than 200 yachts with some amazing names amongst them. Galactica Supernova, Crazy Me, Octopussy, 50-knot Octopussy, and most recently Santosha, which is also up for a World Superyacht Award this year. So in a statement, Heesen said, Frans Heesen embodied the spirit of Dutch courage, taking bold and sometimes audacious steps that define the shipyard's future. His brave decision to embark on the challenge of building the groundbreaking yacht Octopussy is a testament to his visionary approach. Despite the immense risks involved, including the potential for the shipyard's demise, Frans's unyielding faith and determination not only ensured Octopussy was a triumph, but also propelled Heesen to global acclaim. The statement continued, Frans dedicated his entire life to the shipyard, fostering an environment that felt more like a family than a business. Even after the company was sold, the family atmosphere he cultivated remained strong. Today, this sense of family and the values he instilled continue to define Heesen. Frans's contributions have left an indelible mark on the yachting industry and everyone who had the honor of working with him. Thoughts with the whole Heesen family at the moment. He was a giant.
And just what an incredible list of boats.
Yeah.
An amazing, incredible achievement.
You sometimes forget the back catalogues, don't you? Mm. So this morning I was just looking through the Heesen database on the website, the directory we've got. And yeah, some of the names are pretty amazing.
Crazy Me is extraordinary.
Wild looking boat. Yeah. Yeah, incredible back catalogue, incredible history, and an incredible legacy. So thoughts with the Heesen family at the moment. But the headlines have been very Heesen heavy at the moment, haven't they? Because earlier in the month, we learned that the yacht had been sold to a Dutch entrepreneur called Lawrence Last.
Who is that?
So he is a Dutch entrepreneur. He made a lot of money in the packaging industry. He owns a super yacht, not a Heesen.
Tricky. What does he own?
He's got a Fed ship. Oh, but I'm sure Heesen is in his future.
It's going to change. Expect to see that on the market soon.
So Lawrence Last founded International Packaging Network, IPN, in 1994, and he served as CEO there. And he became a big player in the packaging industry. He also established a company called International Packaging. In 2022, he joined the board of SIG Group, a leading provider of packaging solutions. So obviously that's his background, and he's got a love of yachts, owns a Fed ship, as mentioned, and has now taken his controlling interest in Heesen. So he said, when the news was announced, this acquisition is more than an investment. Heesen represents the pinnacle of Dutch engineering and maritime craftsmanship. I am honored to take the ownership and ensure the brand continues to flourish for generations to come. So that news was off the back of some figures released by Heesen charting a record-breaking financial performance in 2024. So newly released figures indicate the Dutch yard reached revenues of 209 million euros and an EBITDA of 17 million euros with full sheds.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So Heesen on a flyer. They've got this new ownership, a new verve, only slightly, the gloss has slightly been taken off by the passing of Frans, but I'm sure he'd be very happy with the state the company's in at the moment. And the future, the very bright future that is ahead for Heesen in the ownership of Laurens Laas. I don't want to spend too much of the podcast dwelling on death, but this is also my first opportunity since our dear friend Eddie Jordan died in March to note his passing. So during the Palm Beach Boat Show, Eddie died in Cape Town. He was 76. And he had been ill for a few years. He had cancer. And if you read his columns regularly, you'll know he repeatedly implored everyone to go and get PSA tests because I think it started in his prostate and spread. So any man over 40 should be getting a prostate cancer test every year, I think, is the general advice. And Eddie would certainly subscribe to that too. But he was a friend of mine. He was a dear friend of the businesses. He had written his Lippy from the Liffey column every month for 10 years since October 2014. And beyond, writing that column for us and telling some amazing stories, he really helped us out. He always made connections for us. He played with his band, The Robbers, at lots of events. And he was one of the family, and he'll be hugely, hugely missed by everyone here. And he also did us a huge favor a couple of years ago when he got us on Top Gear. Did you see that episode?
I actually did see it, and I seem to remember them going on about it for ages. So it wasn't just like a little cameo. No. It's like a proper combo.
Yeah. So I remember I got the call. This was 2016 or 2017 or something like that. And Eddie said, I think I can get you on Top Gear. So come on, what are you talking about?
No chance.
Because at the time, Top Gear was, it kind of lost its way a bit, Top Gear, but I think it was still pretty good then.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most watched shows on planet Earth. So I was like, yeah, if you can get Boat International on Top Gear, that'd be great. And then, so the idea kind of developed. And the whole conceit was a couple of the presenters took this horrific looking car called a Sanyong Rhodius, which was designed to apparently mimic the kind of lines of a yacht. They chopped the bottom off and stuck it on a Sunseek. I think it was a Sunseek Hawk 27. I think they stuck the kind of car superstructure on top of the hull of a Sunseek Hawk 27, stuck a couple of engines in it, and then, bonded it all together. And they kind of claimed it was the Sang-Yong super yacht or something like that. And then in the episode, Eddie, they take it to Monaco. And of course, Eddie's there. And Eddie does a review as a Boat International journalist of the Sang yacht. They call it the Sang yacht. But like you, I was kind of expecting it to be like, oh, we get a mention. But like half the show,
it's huge.
Eddie Jordan here for Top Gear reviewing the Sang yacht. And it was very, very funny. Very funny episode.
After we watch it.
It's, as a reminder to everyone listening, it's episode 7 of season 24 of Top Gear.
And you can still watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got the issue. So, and then actually Eddie didn't write it. I wrote it, but I was there. So we did a kind of review of the Sang yacht in the magazine because they wanted in the studio to show the issue of the magazine with the review of the Sang yacht. So they had that issue. It was a May issue, I recall. I think it was a May.
We should put it against the podcast.
Yeah, we will. I'll put the link in there. And I got the issue out and they said, oh, Eddie's trashed us in Boat International.
That's so good.
Anyway, it was a lot of fun to do, but it was all because of Eddie Jordan. And I also wanted to, he had a little tattoo on his wrist that I always loved. All his family have the same tattoo. It says FTB on his wrist. And FTB stands for Fuck the Begrudges.
Really? Oh, wow. And they all have it?
All have it.
That's so cool.
It's so cool.
I love that.
So Here are some words from Eddie's very final column in Boat International. He wrote, "Time flies and you don't get a second chance. The meter only goes forwards. When they eventually lay me down to rest, I would like to think there's not much that I haven't done." Eddie, he did it all. He really did.
Incredible.
Thanks for everything, Eddie. And we'll stop talking about death.
I know, I'm sorry.
Queenie, cheer us up.
I know.
Cheer us up.
It's slightly different, but in the name of journalism, I've been doing some pretty weird travel. And it's not really my bag, but it seems to be the cool thing to do right now. And there's a lot of these like wellness clinics popping up all over the world.
Like a mad ones.
Yeah. And like,
only drink water.
We've all done those. I mean, okay. I've done those. You probably haven't.
I've definitely done one of those.
I've done those where you go to like a wellness kind of clinic or retreat, and then you just have to drink those water and eat healthily. This is like White Lotus times 10. Like, you are being like investigated, and the whole idea is that it will make you live longer, makes you live a better life. But they are mad, like they're really, really strange. I've done two of them. One of them was called Zen Wellness, and that's in Altea, Spain. They're both brand new, these places.
So how did you come to, is this for investigations for a report in Boat International?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to do a big wellness thing.
Excellent.
However, so it came to me and I was extremely reluctant, and this is going to make me sound really awful. And if the PR is listening to this, they're going to be really disappointed because it was sold to me because they said they'd fly me in a jet.
So you just wanted a PJ trip.
I know. But I did have to fly back commercial on the way back. So, you know.
Slumming it.
But anyway, the first one was a place called Zen Wellness in Altea, Spain, which is actually a really beautiful little place just beyond Benidorm. So it's not necessarily very well known, but it's super, super beautiful. And this place is all about longevity, anti-inflammatory food, anti-aging, all the good stuff. But for a clinic, it actually felt distinctly unclinical. The space is already beautiful. It's filled with flowers. It's quite feminine. Lots of pink marble everywhere. They even make the water there like alkaline, so it's better for you. And everything is thought about. There was also a woman that followed me around to be like, "Georgia, you've only had two glasses of water today."
Really?
Yeah. And it was amazing. And you spend your days in oxygen chambers and all kinds of heart health scans and cosmetic stuff. There's a dermatologist that sort of pulls bits of your skin and your face up to say that you should get Botox in certain places, which is fine. We'll just brush over that. And it was incredible, but in like a really nourishing, I felt very well, and really cool technology. And they kind of show you what you could do to basically essentially make you live to 120 years old.
What?
Yeah. And the food's really good. So it's not like fasting. So you actually eat really good food, but it's just like no sugar and less caffeine and all that kind of stuff. So it's very manageable.
Is it fun though?
I had a nice time. To be fair, when I arrived, I was like, fuck this. Like, this is not for me at all. Like, there's no wine unless you really, really ask for it. I had a nice time because I'm just quite inquisitive and I like a massage. There's loads of massages and I think I did tell them to be completely accurate. And when you're a journalist, it's very tempting, I'm sure, for a property to be like, "Oh, you're extremely healthy and well. Well done you." But I did actually find out some quite useful stuff, like, about my health. I mean, I've got good health, apparently, and I'm very grateful for it. So it's really interesting. And I think it's an interesting thing to look at, especially in super yachts, because technically you could kind of do this on board. And there are ways to get all these systems actually on your boat. But at the opposite end of the spectrum, I also went to another one called Buff Wellness, which is in Germany, and kind of like it's intense. It's no food.
My image is people in white coats.
Oh, with a lot of white coats. And again, it's in quite a beautiful place around Lake Constance, which is really beautiful. But I really wanted to go to the town. And it really is. It's a Mayo Clinic, so they kind of make you fast and you do have three meals a day, but it's like some avocado paste with a kind of tiny little dollop of...
Oh, so it just sounds awful.
That was really hard. And I had a banging headache as well because I clearly have a caffeine addiction. And anyway, so then I was like, "Oh, I'm going to go to Constance, this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful town." And they were like, oh, great, we'll get you an escort. Clearly, I'm untrustworthy. So the bloody doctor came with me because, like, we're going to make sure you don't have a beer and a pizza, basically. And apparently, if you do, this place, if you do do that, they kick you out.
Wow.
They take your money and kick you out.
It wouldn't last 10 minutes.
You're supposed to be there for 21 days as well.
There's no way.
But I did feel quite good. And it is actually, I mean, I've been slagging it off, but it is genuinely incredible. I left feeling extraordinary. Like I was sort of floating and they, again, I'm really interested in places that they do like MRI heart scan stuff and you can watch like your heart and it's really cool. But it does pose a question. Is it too much? Would you want to know?
Yeah, I would. I suppose I would, but I couldn't do 21 days of this. I'm so cynical about
it. It's quite popular.
Is it?
Yeah. Lots of people do it.
I bet it costs an absolute fortune as well.
It is not cheap.
Yeah. So it's not for me.
Okay. Well, you never know. I might send you on one, see what you feel. Okay. But in a slightly different line of thought, we have some really cool trips coming up. Cool travel subjects to look at. And I think that I've stumbled across something that I'm really excited about and I think is really cool, which is Nova Scotia. And I'm sure many of you will know, but Nova Scotia is a province in eastern Canada on one of the country's four Atlantic provinces. It's a long, narrow peninsula on the southeastern coast and almost entirely surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean. For yachts, it's exciting as they've already got great infrastructure, but they're having this incredible moment on the food and wine front.
Wow.
So definitely no fasting there. But essentially, the good way to describe it is, you know how the UK has been buzzing about sparkling wine over the last decade?
Yeah, because, I mean, isn't our sparkling wine supposed to be some of the best now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Nova Scotia is having its own little sparkling moment right now. Essentially, it's starting to feel like what we've seen happen here. The climate's right and the winemakers are really leaning in and people are just catching on. It's the same vibe as here, so cool climate, but they actually have a really long, mild winter, which makes a really like robust flavor in their
Do
wine.
They? I imagine it's like snow drifts and bitter storms.
Like,
and
I think a good way to describe it is like, think of Scotland on like a really mild day, but not in the peak of summer.
Okay.
So it's not actually as cool as their neighbors. So it's interesting.
Yeah, you're right.
But the wine region there is really, really interesting. And they're exporting all over the world at the moment. And it's just the place to be. I just think it's a really young region, but it's something that loads of sommeliers are talking about at the moment. And on the food front as well. So Nova Scotia has obviously always been known for its lobster, but it's very much a paper plate roadside kind of vibe.
Love that.
Lobster roll kind of vibe.
Yeah.
It's not exactly fine dining, or hasn't been in the past, but it's starting to change. So there's this new wave of chefs and refined restaurants reimagining lobster in all kinds of creative and elevated ways. So it's a really exciting time to visit. I was actually very quickly chatting to the team at EOS yesterday, and they are too seeing growing interest. And it's mostly private trips. So some of the names of yachts going there are very much private, but I'm expecting charter to pick up here soon. So it really is one to watch. I'm excited about it. I'm going to get a bottle of the Nova Scotia Finest. We can have it.
Yeah, bring it into the office.
Yeah, we'll have it in the next podcast. It was better when we're drinking. And another thing that we are looking forward to, I'm looking forward to, is I am off to the Galapagos. And it is a once-in-a-lifetime place.
Still never done it. Never done it.
So volcanoes, turquoise water and wildlife, the giant tortoises, everyone thinks of, marine iguanas, but actually swim, which I don't know if I like the idea.
I only know about that because from Master and Commander movie with Russell Crowe.
I haven't seen that in years.
It's a great movie.
Maybe I should rewatch it.
You definitely should.
But so in order to, obviously yachts have been cruising the Galapagos for quite some time, but I want to find out how to do it in the most luxurious way possible. Sorry.
Of course you do.
I just want to see, I'm going with Cooks and Adventures and I want to see how they are going to do like a next level way to experience it. Something really cool, really different. And I've been looking into ways that people have done it in the past, like just cool itineraries. And I want to see if we can do something better.
The Uber Lux Galapagos Experience.
Exactly.
By Georgia Boscawen.
Yeah. It's a good time to be a travel journalist, I think.
It's always a good time to be a travel journalist.
God, I must piss everyone off.
I did actually, while you're talking about cool destinations, I forgot to mention that during the Palm Beach Boat Show, we also launched an event called the Bermuda Superyacht Rendezvous, another very, very special island destination. So this is taking place in 2026 from the 18th to the 21st of June. We have some details on the website now, but those of you familiar with our Between the Bays event from a few years ago, basically it's a similar concept. We take a fleet of superyachts and we have a brilliant time for a few days in a very spectacular destination. Red carpet rolled out, the best food, best wine, best destinations, best hotels, all of that kind of stuff. So that's the Bermuda Superyacht Rendezvous taking place in June 2026. And there is some information on the website now if you'd like to learn more.
Sounds great.
It's going to be fantastic. So I'm looking forward to that in 2026. Yeah. But Queenie, you're very much looking forward to...
I'm off next week.
You're off next week to Miva and then Medis.
I know, it's boat show season. I can't really believe it. I feel like I've just left Antigua. And yet here we are again about to do it. But yeah, I'm ready for it. And there are a huge amount of shows coming up in May. We've got Miva, Newport Beach, Palma, Medis, World Superyacht Awards, Barcelona Golf, and Venice.
Yeah, it's a crazy May and June, and that's World Superyacht Awards. Yeah, where a lot of the team are flying there on Tuesday next week. I'm flying out on Friday with a bunch more people. Welcome cocktails next Friday, and then the big gala ceremonies on the Saturday. So it's a whirlwind kind of 48 hours, but it's going to be a fantastic event in Venice again. Can't wait. It's going to be great. And then shortly after that, the golf. The boat volley golf tournament in Barcelona.
You love a bit of golf, don't you?
I do like golf, yeah. I'm very average at it.
Oh.
No.
I thought you were going to say I'm very good.
No, like one shot in kind of five will come out quite nicely, and the next will, the other four will make me want to throw my clubs into the nearest body of water, but but I still enjoy it.
It's all about taking part, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, boat shows. There are, of course, there's an incredible lineup of yachts naturally coming to these shows. I won't go into every single one as we will literally be here all day, but let me give you a quick rundown of some of the standouts that really caught my eye.
So starting with the Miva show in San Remo.
Yeah. So it's actually returning to its roots because the show launched here 35 years ago. And this year it's going to be running from the 21st to the 1st of May. And the yachts attending will range from 20 to 90 meters in length.
21st to the 1st of May?
No, it's in the 21st of April.
Oh. So it's running now?
Oh, sorry, 28th. Sorry. I'm late. Okay, 28th to the 1st of May. So ranging from 20 to 90 meters in length, the Miva Charter Show brings us the classic 90-meter Nero, which will be the largest yacht in attendance. Which is available for charter with Burgess. My absolute fave, the Ocean Co's 81.2 meter Alfa Nero will be there with Northrop and Johnson. And I actually went on board in Antigua and, oh my God, have you been on?
Never, no.
Never?
Never been on board Alfa Nero.
You loser.
No, I know.
So I did go on in Antigua and I just cannot express how good that refit is. Quite a lot of people have asked me about this because obviously it was very much people wanted to know what was going on, and she was held up in Antigua for quite some time. And I went on board really looking for signs of damage, and I just don't know how they pulled it off. The finish is extraordinary. In the best possible way, it's like stepping back in time to when she was launched. So you've obviously got all the beautiful Pinto interiors, and it's extraordinary what they've done. So I really am quite happy to see her back over this side of the pond. So it's very exciting. And the list doesn't stop there. So we've got 72 meter Axioma with Northrop and Johnson, 65.2 meter Necto with Camper and Nicholson's. The very cool This Is It with
IYC. Yeah.
Very, very cool. That'll be there. Queen Martina represented with Fraser. So it's really, it's going to be a very exciting show and some really great yachts to look forward to. And then we're off to Greece.
Then do you go straight from San Remo to Greece?
Yeah. Well, no, a couple of days.
Okay.
And then, because then it's Naomi will, because then it's WSA.
Oh, of course.
And then it's straight into Medis.
Yeah.
So it's party time. I mean, work time. So Medis, it's an amazing show. It's an intense show. And it runs from the 3rd to the 7th of May. And this is one of my absolute faves. I really love it. The Greeks know how to put on a charter show. There's just so much going on. I just can't even put into words how much you have to do, but in the best way. So there's like a big cocktail event. There's a chef's competition. There's this incredible venue. So you have these drinks up at this beautiful kind of castle that overlooks all of the boats. It's amazing. Really, really cool. And this year actually marks the 10th anniversary. And there are 102 yachts confirmed. Just seeing that I've written, get this, my script. Get this, there are 102 yachts in attendance.
Is that most ever?
I think it might be, but I'll have to check. I think it might be. It's certainly at the top end, but last year, I do remember. Last year, they definitely hit a record, but give or take, it'll be the difference between the two would be one or two yachts. So okay. It's very much on the top level. And Nafplio Marina is really beautiful because it's set around this really flat, long quayside. So you can pretty much see every boat in one go. So it's amazing. It's like a floating catwalk, except for yachts and me. And some of the yachts that are going to be there are going to be 61 meter iToto with Pass 4 yachting, 59.3 meter Idyllic with IYC, 56 meter Omatilde, apologies, with Fraser Yachts Greece, if that's how you pronounce it. The 50 meter sailing yacht Barracuda Filete with Pass 4 yachts. And Naomi is coming with me this year, which I'm very excited about. Was Adam, and now it's Naomi.
Naomi is a head of social. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I've never been to Medis.
I thought you were quite keen to come out last year.
Yeah, it's just there's too much happening in Rome.
Bloody heck.
But also it's, I think we've got enough people there. But it does look like a lot of fun.
It's so much fun. It's great for business.
And it's more a B2B event, isn't it?
It's a charter event. So it's the whole idea is that charter brokers actually get on board and get to see the Greek fleet because it's actually one of the few.
It's a fleet you don't see very often in the Western Med. So it's quite a different group of boats.
But it's a fleet that's becoming incredibly important.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting part of the industry. For a long time, we just didn't really understand the Greek fleet and how it works. It's slightly different regulations and the way that they operate is just slightly different. But now it's just an incredible opportunity. And obviously, the Greek charter season is incredibly long. You've got those amazing islands, all these places to see. And when you go around the show and speak to the captains, they're all just so passionate about the place.
Mm.
And because obviously, the Greek fleet, it stays in Greece mostly. You know, you can come obviously and enter Greece, but they spend obviously the peak of the summer cruising Greece and they just know the best places, the little quiet spots that no one else would be able to find. It's a brilliant show and it's the one time I would say that it's the Greek fleet is really well represented. So I'm very excited to go there.
So that is Medis, which I think stands for Mediterranean Yacht Show.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, it does.
Medis. That's Medis taking place in Greece from the 3rd to the 7th of May. So Queenie likes to make some funny social media videos.
Yeah, I wonder if I was to do that without Adam this year.
So look out for those.
Or don't look out for them. I'm not sure if they get me in trouble or not.
No, they're good. They're good. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about tariffs quickly as well. Rather frustratingly, so last week we actually did, so Gabby, our business editor, and I recorded a podcast all about tariffs. We did lots of work on it. We recorded the podcast on the 8th of April, a week before last. And then the next day, Trump postponed the introduction of these tariffs, making everything we had just recorded totally redundant, which was frustrating, to say the least. But I thought it'd be worthwhile to have a look at where we are today in the world of tariffs. So As everyone knows, Trump's tariff day didn't really happen. The markets crashed and he announced a 90-day pause on these punishing reciprocal tariffs. But he has maintained a baseline 10% tariff on all US imports. China didn't escape. However, he hit them with 145% tariff. And then the Chinese retaliated with 125% tariff on US imports to China. So various senior figures in the US administration I've been reading this morning are signaling that a de-escalation from this effective trade embargo is imminent. And lots of things escaped those punishing 145 and 125% tariffs, various components of smartphones, etc. Other tariffs that remain are 25% import duty on steel and aluminium to the US, as well as cars and car parts. So basically where we are now, governments around the world have this window of opportunity to negotiate down these reciprocal tariffs and keep them as low as possible. They're the headlines that many people would be aware of, but how does any of this affect the superyacht market, you may well be asking. Well, the superyacht manufacturing industry is as global a business as it gets. Superyachts are the sum of hundreds of thousands of parts, and not all of these are made in America, obviously. So each and every one of those imported parts to America now attracts a duty, making yachts more expensive to build, which ultimately risks higher prices for buyers for domestically built superyachts in the United States. And it obviously also impacts completed yachts finished elsewhere. Taiwan, for instance, with its powerhouse builders Horizon and Ocean Alexander, well, they sell a lot of yachts into the US, as do Italian and British yards. Taiwan is facing a reciprocal tariff of 32%. So can you imagine the impact on these yards if their yachts are overnight a third more expensive for US buyers? It could be utterly devastating. Meanwhile, for all those US sports boat builders, imagine, you know, the likes of Bayliner and Boston Whaler, there's no way European jurisdictions are going to allow their import without a retaliatory tariff. And what about those massive outboards? The end, you know, the American center console market loves those big yammies, aren't made in America, so they're going to be more expensive.
Gosh, it's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot. It's a lot. So the real danger that I see is the kind of the production and semi-custom end of the market. The big custom yachts Americans buy from Germany and the Netherlands, Italy, Turkey, they're generally offshore flagged and never officially imported into the US, so they should escape the duties. But if you're buying a 10-meter, 15-meter, 20-meter boat from Taiwan or Europe, you're not exactly offshore. You're going to be paying more for that boat if you're bringing it to the US. So what we could see, speculated one well-connected lawyer we spoke to about this, is a massive benefit for countries nearby the US. So if you can import your boat to the Bahamas instead of Miami and avoid paying 30% more for it, you're going to seriously investigate that option. So there is a danger here for the US marina market too, as owners and their boats flee for friendlier regimes. Could the US flag be in danger too? Do you want to flag your boat US, officially import into the US, if it's going to cost you a lot more?
God, it's really quite terrifying, actually, isn't it?
So the lawyer said, I anticipate that these tariffs are likely to be particularly damaging to the US yachting sector, with owners, no matter their nationality, avoiding the jurisdiction and enjoying their assets in the Caribbean and elsewhere. So, you know, the headline, the pace of headline is almost, well, it's hard to keep up with at the moment, isn't it, really? Policies change on a dime, it seems. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. It's a lot of uncertainty out there at the moment, which is not conducive to a buoyant superyacht market. This industry likes calm seas. Because if you're committing to a 3 or 5 year build, you want to know the world's going to be a vaguely normal place when your boat pops out at the end of that process. Anyway, Gabby has done a brilliant job of tracking this story and keeping us all up to date. So keep checking the Boat International website for the latest. Last but not least, Queenie, I thought I'd give you a little exam.
Oh, why do you always do this?
So one of my favorite boats, actually, the support boat U81, which is a custom 80-meter support boat built by Diamond Yachting. Why is it my favorite support boat? Mainly because in one video I saw on social media, the crew were playing cricket on the aft deck, and that was it for me.
Oh, my God.
Sealed it. Best boat ever.
Goodness.
If you can play cricket on your boat, that is... the ultimate.
Have you ever played any kind of sport on a boat?
I might have shot a few hoops.
Oh,
but
big talk.
I've never played paddle in the Aviva paddle.
No, that's court. Very cool.
I've never played cricket. Never, nor tennis.
Let's get out.
Yeah, shuffleboard on a cruise ship when I was about 13, maybe.
That still counts.
So, in light of U81 sale, I just wanted to quickly review where we are with the sport boat market. I should mention, actually, U81 was sold in a deal between Burgess and Edmiston. So, I'm going to quiz you, Queenie. Yeah. So, how many super yacht support vessels over 24 meters are there on the water currently?
So, when I think of sport boats, I think of the ones that I recognise, and I think that there'll be more out there. So I'm going to say in the 70s.
There's actually only 59.
No.
There's actually not that many.
Oh my God, I thought it was much bigger than that.
Yeah, I think most people do think it's bigger than that, that there's a lot of these big super yachts out there running around with little support boats carrying all the tenders and toys. But actually, there's only 59 support boats over 24 meters.
Oh, that's mad.
What is the average length of those 59 boats?
Well, I think it's smaller. So maybe around 45?
Well, it's actually bang on as well. It's 59. So,
I thought you meant I was bang on.
No. So the 59 support...
That's absolutely correct.
The 59 support boats out there have an average length of 59.1 meters. What is the average age of the 59 support boats?
10 years.
It's actually double that. It's 19.5.
Oh my God, I think I should just leave now.
So it's quite an old fleet, mainly because 44% of all support boats are conversions from older boats.
It's amazing that it's 19.5 years, 19 and a half years for the average age, yet they're only 59.
Yeah.
How mad is that?
The leader in the field, as we all know, Darwin Yachting, which delivered 22 support vessels to date.
I mean, that's what you'd think of, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I was thinking.
Well, you mentioned support vessel. I just think of those Darwin and Sea Axe Bow kind of support vessels.
Yeah.
And over the last 10 years, we've averaged around 2 to 4 support vessel deliveries per year. There are currently 4 in build, according to the Global Order Book.
Probably at Darwin.
2 were at Darwin.
Yeah.
2 were elsewhere.
Amazing. If you had a support boat, what would you use it for?
Cricket.
I knew you were going to say that.
Cricket.
Yeah.
I just have a cricket pitch on the back of it. Cricket net. Bowling
machine. Then he's happy. Yeah. Let's do it. I was playing cricket. Leave him alone.
Cricket in a golf simulator.
Oh.
So can
I am not coming on your boat.
Improve my horrific slice.
Yeah. Just in time for the golf?
Just in time for the golf. Well, thanks, Queenie. That's all we have time for this week. Appreciated your spa insights and your weird travel trends.
Yeah, it's only going to get weirder.
Only going to get weirder. And thank you all for tuning in to this week's Boat Briefing, which has been a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Don't forget us.
And we will see you next time.